We have both a priest and a minister in the congregation this morning. So here's the deal. Unitarian Universalism is a life-saving religion. That was a sermon I gave 3 weeks ago, but I wasn't finished. Because one of our yous, the Universalist side, is all about the saving power of love. Now, when I talked about the theology behind the term Universalism, I often referred to the historical fact that Universalists did not believe that people went to hell. A loving God would not allow his creations eternally to be damned. And this is the conclusion I came to before I knew of such a thing as Universalism, when I lived abroad for a year and saw all the wonderful people in other lands and of different religions that my Baptist faith said were going to hell because they did not believe in Jesus as their Savior. It made absolutely no sense to me. Universalism says the same. It makes no sense, especially given the emphasis on the saving power of love found in stories about God's compassion in the Bible. One of the classic Universalist stories about the saving power of love quite literally has to do with Hosea Ballou. Hosea Ballou was one of those remarkable 19th century Universalist ministers who was, for many years, one of those circuit riders that traveled throughout New England telling about the good news. The good news of the saving power of love. This was a huge departure from traditional Christianity of the last millennium, so much so that hundreds of small Universalist churches dotted the countryside of northern New England and New York. The story goes like this. Ballou was riding the circuit again when he stopped for the night at a New England farmhouse. The farmer was upset. He confided in Ballou that his son was a terror and got drunk in the village every night and fooled around with women. The farmer was afraid that his son would go to hell. "All right," said Ballou with a serious face. "We'll find a place on the path where your son will be coming home drunk, and we'll build a big fire, and when he comes home, we'll grab him and throw him into it." The farmer was shocked. "That's my son, and I love him." Ballou said, "If you, a human and imperfect father, love your son so much that you wouldn't throw him in the fire, then how can you possibly believe that God, the loving Father, would do so?" The belief in hell, of course, is not a mainstay of many liberal Protestant churches today, including our own. But underlying all of this is the fundamental reality that what is essential to our souls and spirits is the life-giving and life-saving power of love. So what are our love saves stories? This is the phrase that a colleague in Vermont calls, and he shows, in fact, what it means through the power of love to tell these stories. So there are three members. If you haven't noticed, this is part of the Worship Arts Committee. We call ourselves WAC or WACO. Did I tell you that? So here are a few stories of the power of love.
Her grandfather always reminded her that people often suffer pain in silence. We rarely ever know the pain someone is actually in, and before we pass judgment or disappointment onto others, we must consider a person's humanity. We must consider their inherent worth and dignity. This is not the easiest lesson to practice. People can be mean, and compassionate people can feel another's emotions on a cellular level. That does not always mean we accurately interpret those emotions, and it does not always mean we can protect ourselves from their negativity either. People who are in pain sometimes withdraw, but sometimes they can lash out too, and it is incredibly hard not to react or be influenced by their confusing or unprovoked projections. Having lived with a man whose moods changed like the weather in Maine, but whom she loved very deeply, she often reminded herself of what her grandfather taught her. This man was suffering a pain that only he understood. As difficult as it was to live in a house filled with icy silence, imagine what it must be like to live in an icy body. She reminded herself of his pain to the point that she made excuses for it, and to the point that she spent all of her energy trying to heal his heart, all the while forgetting her own. She reminded herself of a line from a Mary Oliver poem she read once. Listen, are you breathing just a little and calling it life? But that was not her life at all. There was plenty of hard work, but nothing cohesive. There was no shared vision. She'd made plenty of sacrifices. She'd put her dreams on hold so he could pursue his own, but the return never came. Her desire to write the great American novel, her longing to return to the stage, her ambition to return to school and find work that made a difference in the world had never seemed further away. A blurred photograph snapped on a day long ago, the colors once vivid with the promise of love making her world a bigger and more vivid place. A deep depression settled into her heart as her icy home seeped into her own icy body. She had a decision to make, and she sat on it for a year, all the while hoping change would hatch and love would appear, feathers and all. It did not come. She left Maine to travel for business for a corporate job that made her teeth and her bones ache. She arrived in Phoenix in the middle of August, monsoon season in full swing. She marveled at the humidity which greeted her at the airport and the absence of the dry Arizona heat she had been promised. She was thankful for the distance between herself and the man she once clung to at night, breathing in unison. But not even 3,000 miles of geography, not even 105 degree temperatures could thaw her heart. One night, in the pool of the hotel she was staying in, the water warmer than she could believe, and a soft electric storm floating in the clouds above her, she met a man who spoke of heartache and healing. A total stranger who talked to her until her fingers pruned and she wondered if it might be possible just to fall asleep while floating. And this amazing thing happened. She started talking too. As soon as she spoke, the words fell out of her mouth like they would never stop. She told him everything because she had nothing to lose. She told him the things that she had kept from her friends. She told him the words she did not even dare speak to her mother. And he listened. He passed no judgment. He acknowledged her pain and offered her no advice at all. Here she was in a foreign place talking to a complete stranger, yet she felt lighter than she had in years. She later realized that this man, although he did not know her, did not know her history or her depth, had shown her an unexpected kind of love. He had shown her compassion, had noticed that she was suffering in silence, and actually took the time to ask about it. It was a gift. She realized that if a total stranger could take the time to love her, then she could certainly take the time to love herself. On the plane ride home, she recalled the Mary Oliver poem, The Journey. High above the ground, somewhere near Philadelphia, she made the decision to love herself, to save herself.
I recently gotten back in touch with a friend of mine from college. She had been living in Boston for the last 4 years, and being originally from a small town in Minnesota, she was looking to get out of the city life. I invited her to visit us here, and I said I would show her the wonders of the Midcoast. Also, I had another reason. I was curious. I had not seen her in about 15 years. I knew from photos and postings on Facebook that she was not married and didn't have any children. But when I knew her in college, my friend was a vibrant young woman, With a quirky sense of humor and an easy laugh, she was an East Asian studies major and was learning Chinese and president of her sorority. Where had her life taken her? As we were sitting at one of the local watering holes after the requisite tour of the waterfront, we were discussing the last 15 years of our lives. Finally, she looked at me as if she could read my mind and said, "I was in an abusive marriage, and because of that, I lost my way for a while." This was not what I was expecting to hear. I looked at her and said, "But you seem okay now. You seem happy. You have a good job, and, you know, I don't see any of that on you right now. How or what helped you?" And she said one word. She said, "Horses." And I said, "Horses?" And she said, "Yeah. Well, one horse in particular named Jasper." I was living with my parents in Texas after the end of my marriage, not really sure of anything anymore. I had been a military wife and had given a lot up in order to be with my husband. We lived in Germany for a while and other bases around the country. I had nothing when it was over. One day I was skimming through a newspaper, and I saw an ad in the newspaper saying to come for horse riding lessons. And something in my gut, she said, "Go." Now, I had never liked, these are her words, horses as a kid, she said. My sisters both had taken lessons and been riding and always invited me to join them, but I was not interested. Frankly, I was scared of them. I arrived at the ranch, and my first few lessons on Jasper went okay, but, you know, still sort of rocky, and I was very nervous. But I still went back. Something in my gut said to go back. Frankly, it got me out of the house. It gave me something else to think about for a while, she said. Jasper was a big brown gelding who was blind in his left eye. But he was a solid horse and not apt to do anything crazy. One day, after a couple of lessons, the instructor said that we were going to do something different today. She said, "I want you to come into the arena and face Jasper, and now close your eyes and relax and take a deep breath. Now focus your energy on your feet." A few seconds passed. Now she said, "Focus your energy on your knees." Another few seconds passed. Now she said, "Focus your energy in your heart." Suddenly, I felt a bump right here. Opened my eyes, and Jasper's nose was inches from my chest. He bumped me again and sort of pushed me to his right side. The instructor said, "He wants you to know that he wants to see you. He wants you to know that he accepts you and you are part of his herd. He is connecting with you." And from that moment on, we were a team, this big, hulking, massive animal and I. And with that small gesture from a velvety, warm nose, I began to change and come back to myself again.
Well, we hadn't talked to one another about what our stories were, so I'm surprised. We have time. I have four stories here, so I was only supposed to get 3 minutes, but I could take the rest of 15 minutes. Right? I had a story of transformation of love through truth telling. I had a story of transformation of love through lying. A story which I actually would recommend to you that comes from the internet about a child, a six-year-old child who lost both parents. So I would recommend, you just can Google that and you'll find a very lovely story. This isn't quite the same without the video. So I chose instead. I found him literally in left field. I'd say he was about 10, and he was fiercely focused on the game, awaiting his next spectacular catch in the outfield. He was fast, usually the fastest in his class. He was accustomed to be the last person tagged in a game of Gorman, which was a progressive game of tag where everyone eventually became it. He reveled in the act of being chased by everyone. As I watched him, a long ball was hit over to the area where the girls were playing jump rope. He ran an impossibly long way, yelling for the girls to watch out, and he made the catch in the midst of a clutch of girls. As he returned to his position, I noticed that he looked as if he had just had a very satisfying meal. I could see that it was just such events and circumstances that fed him. Being most popular, or fastest, or smartest, was what fed him, and without it, he really was out in left field. These methods of gaining attention and esteem were not extracurricular for this child. They were a basic need, which was not optional. He had to work every second to fulfill this need, the need to be loved that is so essential and unique to us humans. I could see he was exhausting himself. He went back to his focus on the game, and I decided to take the opportunity to make my entrance. I went over and stood beside him. I think he was curious at first and a little concerned that I might get in his way. Then perhaps a dawning realization that something else was happening. I introduced myself. "I'm you grown up," I said. Perhaps he was a little confused, but when I told him I loved him and he didn't have to perform at such a frantic pace, he collapsed to the ground. I stayed beside him for a time and promised that I would revisit him. This was an early piece of guided imagery in my journey. My intention now is that whenever I find myself getting frantic, I visit with this child. He no longer collapses and is happy and relieved to know that he is still loved. When this need is met, this need for love, it is possible for me to give of myself from a place of love. Blessed be.
Thank you. This is not the only time we will talk about Love Saves Stories. And I invite you to send me a story that has meaning for you, a story about someone or about yourself that shows the power of love. I will end with a story that another colleague told about a time when he was at a nursing home to see a particular individual. He would walk down the hallway and everyone around would greet him with great big smiles and say hi and ask him out for a date. And then he would walk down the hallway to the end, actually, where he was to see the woman that he wanted to see. She was always seated in a wheelchair at the end of the corridor, always had a frown, never smiled, and with glaring eyes asked this minister, "Why am I still here? Why am I not dead?" He wasn't exactly sure how to respond, but fumbled through a few minutes and then said a prayer with her. This went on for some time with exactly the same questions. Why am I still here? Why am I not dead? In exasperation, one day the minister said, "I don't know. Why are you here?" Silence, and then the usual prayer. When he came back the following week, she was not around. He felt terrible, thinking that out of his own frustration, he had completely blown it. He went back another week, and yet another, and she was not in the hallway. He went back again, and there she was. When he reached her, she had a big smile on her face and said, "I know why I am here. I am here to love and to be loved." A week later, she died peacefully in her sleep. Our life is all about the saving power of love. May it be so.